This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You're listening to the Design Build Hunt podcast presented by Whitetail Partners. Here we cover all things whitetail property design, habitat improvement, and hunting strategy. Let's change your property for good. Welcome back to another episode of the Design Build Hunt podcast, which is presented by Whitetail Partners. On the line with me today, I've got Jake Hendrickson from Michigan and Sam Billhorn from Whitetail Partners, Wisconsin. Guys, welcome back.
Great to be here, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
Yeah, glad to have you two back on the show. We've got a fan favorite tonight for everybody. We've got another design breakdown. And I've got to be honest, I think this might be one of my favorite things to do as well, is to look at you guys' designs, see what you're doing, see how you're setting these properties up, hearing how you're anticipating success for these different landowners. I just feel like I learn a ton. So I know it's beneficial for a lot of other folks out there as well. But Sam, you're going to be presenting this property for us here today. Me and Jake will hopefully run you through the gauntlet of asking you why you did what you did in certain places. So Jake, take off the gloves. Like, get ready, man. Like, this has got to be.
Oh, I'm ready.
We got to fry him on this one. So, Sam, why did you decide to share this one with us tonight? Like, what is it about this property that makes it one that we should talk about and can glean from?
Well, I like to pick ones that are different. Last time I shared one that was more hill country and showed a lot of the pinch points and topography. This one here I have is fairly flat. This is a central Wisconsin property. And common to that area, we have sandier soils, some low-lying areas. This has got some wetlands on both ends of it. It has some pine roll plantations. It has some well-developed pines, some poorly developed pines. It's got closed canopy, different habitat types, a wide array of soils. So just a lot going on here, and let's unpack it.
That sounds good. That sounds good. So where is the primary access for this piece of ground? So I'm looking at it here. It looks like a pretty sizable chunk. So where's the primary access? And maybe give me some of those details on how big it is, how it lays out.
Right on. So we have here about 100 acres, maybe just a touch over. And they have road access. They got a paved road here on the east side. And they have their cabin and shed here. Really nice setup, by the way. And for guys looking to find an economical way, getting a prefab building out there, dropping it, finishing it, whether you're on power or on generator, can make a great, great cabin, a cost-effective way of doing that. And then they had probably a 30 by 50 pole barn there. So this was their hunting camp. And what I love about that, what they did really well, is it's right up tight to the road next to this other house. They'll have zero disturbance on their deer herd. It could be tempting when you get a property of this size to say, hey, we got this nice gravel road. Let's go put the cabin in the back where, you know, we can have some privacy and enjoy being out in nature and those sort of things. And really that can put a crimp on your plans for habitat and for deer. So that checked the box for me, as they had a really nice setup here right by the road.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So where does this design start? What was one of the things that jumped out to you first where you said, okay, this is something I'm either going to design around in a positive sense, mm-hmm. as you know, this is such a draw, such a unique feature. I look forward to incorporating this. Or is there something on it that you had to design around from a negative perspective of just like, I don't like this. We've got to mitigate this glaring weakness.
Yeah, right on. So whenever I have a property that's fairly flat and see different habitat types, and we have hardwoods and then these big conifer stands, the question goes as to what was there? Why did they choose to do this in the past? What's the history of this? And right away, I want to go to the soils map. And I'm not going to turn that layer on because we've got some landowner information and that sort of thing. But there's just this wide array. And here, I'll just zoom into a part and show it because I can get away with that here. But, you know, the wetlands layer, you know, showing this, all the detail of where that ground is wet, what that looks like. And then also the soils layer, getting into different soil types. I always do overlays on the property to show the various soil types. Land ID is a great program, and I want to emphasize all the overlays that we're doing on plans to try and see what the soils are. It's no wonder that we have these muck soils here in these low-lying areas, and I think that's, that was one of the things I went and looked at right away, is just what's going on with the soils. Where do we have opportunities that we could plant? Now, they had cleared some food plots. In fact, all these big fields they had cleared off, thinking that, you know, they wanted to put as much food into this property as they could. But so I'm working with a couple of years of habitat projects and field clearings and things like that. So there was a lot to unpack here. But when I started diving into it, I realized all these different soils led to very different habitat types. As I mentioned at the top, we have these large closed canopy timber sections. We have wetlands up here on the north end, and then varying developed pine stands throughout, really made for a wide array of things we had to work with here.
Interesting. So where did your prescribed, improvements begin? You know, the food plots on this one are really drawing the eye initially, right? So maybe touch on those and kind of how you maybe tweaked what they were doing just a little.
Yeah, so they had these huge areas cleared. I think this is like a 7 or 8 acre field. Here we kept this as a major destination source, but I'll talk about that in a minute. But all these were just wide open and cleared. So if you picture vertical timber clearings right to the ground, there's no edge feathering, no nothing along these sides. And what I'll just use is back one here as an example. They have they had this big, long L-shaped alley. And it was wide open, you know, hard edge timber on either side. And I want to just introduce a meandering path throughout, still giving them a tree stand opportunity or two, depending on that setup. They still wanted to have blinds for rifle hunting, which we had and maintained. But, you know, introducing a lot more edge and cover adjacent to the food and necking that down also so that there would be more deer travel through those locations and try and induce travel across the landscape.
Got it. So that opening right there, we're talking roughly, I don't know, 40 yards wide or so?
Just yeah, 35, 40 to be generous.
Okay.
So yeah, right. this the trail we have through here, the food plot trail is probably 10 to 15 yards wide itself with some 5 to 10 yard buffers on either side with switchgrass.
Got it. Okay. Excellent. So that's going to provide a sense of security, guide that movement a little bit better, mm-hmm. hopefully lead to more daylight encounters than they were probably having before when it was all wide open.
Yeah. And one of the things Lee likes to talk about when he's bringing into his food plot architecture discussions is generating opportunities for bow hunting alongside these plots or within these plots. So this one here is a great example that, you know, they had this super exposed blind. I wanted to introduce some switchgrass there, maybe even pull that blind back into these pines a little bit to disguise it better. But then I like to have a bubble-like plot outside of that just to throw on our, and I'll just quick throw these. I don't know which one it was, but I'll get them in there, showing in some of the scales. So we got 25 and 50-yard scales there. And what those help us do is have a better feel for the where we want that shot opportunity. Mox grape at 25, apple trees at about 40. You know, that really helps us have that opportunity, and also the edge it creates within the plot. So if you have a perennial adjacent to, say, a fall green, you're going to have a strong edge there. Or maybe let's say you have soybeans. Those could be 4 feet tall. You're going to have edge there. Right. Introducing some trees throughout there, you're going to have some edge. It's going to break that plot up and make it a lot more likely to have that daytime activity. Or at least if a deer comes in here, there's a good chance they're moving through from end to end.
Right, right. So big picture, let's talk about that larger piece. So what did you do to break that up to the, I guess that would be to the east just a bit? There's a lot going on here in this plot. So I'm curious the thought process in the design here.
Yeah, so they still wanted to have this pretty large open field, and volume was really important for them. So I think we're generous on the amount of food in this property, but also the production of the soil could be low, and there'll be could be parts that they won't have the production they wanted. But to take this one, for example, they had cleared it from wall to wall to wall, you know, all four sides. And these gray areas here, those are berms of material. So those were all the trees and junk that they had piled up. They just had these huge berms, and they had no plans, weren't planning to get rid of that stuff. Maybe they could burn it in a few years once the soil washed out of it. It's hard to say. That was just a mess. Mm. But and I don't think it's bad from a breaking it up standpoint, because if you bury some of that in switchgrass, you got that, you know, grass growing around it, it'll start to blend in. And then also it really obstructed view. So deer deer could get at any of these corners and see across all this. I wanted to introduce some switchgrass along these things and along the sides, possibly long-term, maybe even some strips within. But they wanted some long poles of spring planted grains, beans and corn in here. And for a destination food source, I didn't object to it because, sure, you know, these are not bow hunting opportunities. We did sneak one in over here, you know, with this, where the plot dumps in, and this would be more of a perennial walkway here that, There should be a lot of daylight activity along here of deer trying to check these corners out. But that's just the way it lent itself. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, we had a naturally low area here. They had readily available equipment for excavation. So they had interest of bringing a pond into this property. And I thought that'd be a neat place to do it. The soils and the topography lent itself to that. And also, this blind, before they had the blind sitting right out here in the middle of the food plot, right on this top end. And I recommended burying that down in the pines here, plus dumping that pond in front. Not necessarily that this is a water attraction, but that it gave a little buffer. You know, the deer weren't right on top of them there, and they gave them the opportunity, especially with our firearm seasons, that they could get out there. I thought about putting that blind all the way over on the one side, but this is about 300 yards long. And so if we got it a little bit more to the middle, we could keep all of our shot distance to within 200 yards. And I turned those scales on and off before, but this is always something I'm looking at. So right there, we got 195 yards. We're covering the whole thing and then some. And really for firearm season, that's a nice location, nice distance to be covering for those plots.
Right, right. Very good. So what, you know, as let's say we zoom back out here just a bit off of that and into kind of the larger property as a whole, I noticed we've got some purple going on here. We've got some stuff going on there in the middle.
Yeah.
Walk me through what's going on there. I don't recognize that from one of my plans, Sam. So tell me.
Well, that's more recent. We've been pulling that in because we've been talking a lot about this and experimenting with it and really seeing the results too. So in the property, first to set this up, and I talked about different soil types. We had a big break in soil here, obviously the hardwoods that developed over here. And then the soils were rather poor in the middle here. We could still, I think, fight with amendments to get some plot in there. But and that, by the way, that was existing. So this, I was working with the existing condition of what they had they're already cleared. But what I wanted to bring up is this whole area was just some nasty, poorly developed, a variety of conifers and even some hardwoods in there. It was just a thicket. This was never-ending deer trails throughout here and a ton of bedding. It was all bedding. I mean, if we wanted to crawl around through there in another month, we could probably find sheds all over the place in here if we had the effort to do it.
if you were brave enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we don't have any too many lizards up here like you have down there. I wouldn't be shed hunting down in Georgia, Josh.
No, I think between the snakes and the alligators, I think shed hunting is a thing of the past for me down here. But, you know, that's all right.
But back to your point, what I wanted to bring up and really develop here is we always emphasize hunting travel patterns. And there was no pattern about what we had going on in here. You know, there was deer trails just crisscrossing this thing all over the place. And what I wanted to do is I knew we had to have hunter access here. We weren't, it really didn't pay necessarily to go through the timber here to come back again. This was an existing wide open clearing. It was a perennial or, you know, decades old roadway through there. And could keep it clear and probably not something that deer would want to be on too much. And there was a really strong trail between on this edge between these habitat types. Super, super strong. And the topography was, this was a little higher up in here, a little flatter down here. They came through here. This was one of the strongest trails. Well, combine our access with strong trails in a parallel fashion, we come into them perpendicularly. I identified this as being one of our best hunting locations. The only way we could make it better was to make sure it was the way they were going to go through. And yes, while we have this food plot here and they could turn the corner or come around, I didn't want to be getting diving down in here other than they had this blind for rifle hunting. But what I wanted to do was constrict travel all the way across this area that was really high quality bedding and high quality travel. I wanted to have a good stand on one side and on the other, which is this one here. This was a pretty open area, zero bedding. It's kind of wetlands down in here. It's not good bedding area either. It was just really nothing back in there. So to come up in here and hunt this side, and I wanted to make this travel strong. We could cut timber down in here. And in a hardwood setting, I would say that could be easily done. You do some, combine it with some edge feathering, corridor construction. But in conifers, especially poorly developed, you don't, there's no hinge cutting. It's difficult to fell them. It'd be hard to maintain because they break down quickly and get knocked over. So what we're recommending here is a fence. And we are not going out here and making this a high fence operation. We're not trying to contain deer. We're trying to influence their direction and their travel. And in doing so, by pinching this off from A to B, we are going to make our outside corridors on either side of this incredibly strong. We enhance them a little bit more, mock scrape, water hole, some high quality, highly repeatable access on either side, and we're going to have some really strong opportunities for hunting. And really the similar process is repeated over here. And by boxing this a little piece in here, you can see what we're doing is tying that food plot in, that if they're coming from A to B, they're coming to the food plot. We can influence that with bedding. We can influence that with a 100 or a couple hundred feet of fence. And if we do it in a couple different locations, we've left this habitat pretty open and it feels natural, but we've organized the travel substantially on the parcel.
Right. When you've got a spot like this, it's just so thick and there's just not a lot of rhyme or reason to it. Like you said, trails just crisscrossing through it. Beyond adding something like this, does it often pay to come in and clear? Like, let's say if you didn't have a trail or you had several trails kind of all within 20 yards of each other, are you going to come in and clear one out that and really kind of open that one up? And so hopefully sucking some of the movement onto that newly created trail, or what is that going to look like? Because I feel like I'm running into this quite a bit on a lot of properties where you step into let's see, like this past weekend, some 8-year-old pines down here, right? Like eight-year-old longleaf pine. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of undergrowth, but enough to make it difficult to travel through, and deer obviously just walking wherever they please.
Yeah, so I look at it and say, one of the things I'm always cautioning clients on is not over clearing a corridor. Mm-hmm. In hardwoods, I make the 2x5 description, 2 feet wide, 5 feet tall. If you got a duck under a log, that's okay. You don't want to trip over it, but you don't want to be able to drive an ATV through it either.
Right.
So that existing, let's just talk about this one for a second. We want to make sure this is a strong corridor. Well, generally we're going to try and scout the existing one that they're already using and that we want to enhance. Okay. So if there's one that they're using, we're going to identify that. Maybe we'll clean it up. There's some logs in the way. We'll cut that out, slot those out. And then rather than opening that too much, Josh, like you asked the question, mm-hmm. I'm going to look at it and say, I want to make that good, but then I want to make the other ones terrible. I'm going to go and knock down trees, look at for secondary routes. I'm going to cut them off. Or we can get super aggressive and organize the movement with, like I said, even 50 or 100 foot of fencing to influence that pinch point where timber resources are pretty poor.
Got it. Jake, what thoughts are you having so far as you're sort of looking at this property? I really, really like the concept of fencing here, but I'm curious what you're thinking.
No, I agree with that. And I've experienced that on properties that I hunt on. So it's not that we have used fencing ourselves, but our neighbors, we have a couple neighbors who have cattle, and they have fencing that kind of comes into, they just run it right down our property line. And the property line goes right through a thick swamp, so those cattle, they don't go into that swamp. It's too wet for them in there. But they did run, like 20 years ago, the fencing through there. And I can tell you right where those deer walk, they walk right along that fence line. They follow that right. fence edge. And if there's ever a gap in that fence, if a tree falls on it, there's another strong corridor that goes right through that gap. So, and this is just a single barbed wire fence. Imagine if right. you had a I don't know, a snow fence or a whatever fence is recommended here. Like, that's definitely going to pinch movement down, you know, 100%.
I'm recommending out there, Jake, is putting up a 5-foot fence of welded wire fabric, just because it's easy. You can roll out a roll. You can nail it or wire it to trees. Mm. You can put it to T-posts if you want to, if there's the absence of trees, but it's something that's very user-friendly and can be done in a hurry.
Yep. And that's absolutely going to pull or push movement to certain areas. Deer are, for the most part, fairly lazy. Like, they want that path of least resistance. And if they're spooked, they'll jump over it. But if they're just meandering through this property, you can tell exactly where they're going to go. And I guess one thing that caught my attention right away, and I'm sure you have a favorite spot, but I just kind of picked up on one right away here. It's one you're looking at right here. It's stand number T. That's one of my favorite spots right away.
And it's this one down here?
Oh, no. Okay. So the top T.
They're all T.
Okay. They're all T. So north.
Tree stands, yep.
Okay. So go to the right a little bit. That guy right there. Yeah, that one to me, I really like it. I know it's probably more of a southwest wind kind of stand mm-hmm. there, but I just like that you have kind of those bedding corridors cut to funnel that movement down. Like you've got almost 5 different movement patterns funneled down and pinched into that one spot with a mock scrape and a water hole. I just think that that's going to be a great spot, this mm-hmm. coming off season or this coming fall.
Yeah, and there weren't a lot of great trees here, but there was a specific tree that we called out here, and also having this just really wet, nasty area. I mean, you could walk through there with knee boots, but it was a struggle to blow some scent into because the probability of deer being in here were quite low. Also, that provides the access down to it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, I really like this, how all that movement is being pinched down and funneled with either those fences that you have there, the low water area, which is going to define movement, and also those bedding cuts that you have right there. I think that's going to be a great spot.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to emphasize, too, is you can overdo it with anything, and you can overdo it with fencing. You might look at this and say, well, it seems like a lot, but really deer are going to feel quite free. We're just trying to generate some some confined movement. Like this one here is perhaps a little redundant, especially if we have a successful bedding area here. Maybe that wouldn't be as needed. But I wanted to make sure that we had this sure thing at 25 yards from this tree stand for a mock scrape water hole. And, you know, another 10, 15 yards away, you have that piece of fence. And maybe it's only 100 feet long, but that's something that's going to make this really function year in, year out.
Right.
But not trap the deer either. They aren't going to feel trapped by these changes. They aren't going to abandon using this area in here like they are now because we put those fences up. They're just going to be more defined in their travel.
Yep. I like it. Sam, when you think about this property, and this is something that we discuss with clients, and so it's not a secret to them, but what would you say would be like the number one maybe weakness or pain point that you were trying to address with this design? Was there one thing that stood out as like, if we don't fix this, then this property, you know, its hunting is diminished by 30%.
It was absolutely that focused travel. Like I said, there were half a dozen locations on each side of this thing where deer were running in and out of it. This property was fantastic. It was overrun with deer. There was more deer sign in this thicket than I could describe. I mean, it was impressive. But to have that successful opportunity, one might say, let's dive into the middle of it. Well, that would just be absolutely reckless. You want to figure out how can you hunt the edges of this really awesome feature, but do it strategically and influence the deer. And also then the openness of everything. There's lots of switchgrass buffers, some edge feathering, some other details of regeneration and plantings they didn't go into here. A lot more tools in the toolbox to help break up the landscape. Also doing some clear cuts and having regeneration area. You know, that's what this big block was here. And this correlated with a soil type as well that we were identifying to try and make something more of this, because this was kind of a 8-acre pine plantation that wasn't really doing much. So anyway, those are some of the things that stood out to me as I addressed this property.
Interesting. Yeah. So a good example of taking lemons, making lemonade when it comes to the travel piece on this property, of turning what could have been a property's greatest weakness into actually an asset. And another thing, a lot of people may look at this and say, well, you're just trying to manipulate the deer move. You're just trying to put them where you want them. You're just trying to steer them, whatever. And that's true. But if you don't do that, not only are you going to struggle with the deer could be moving pretty much anywhere in and through this thicket and out of the thicket, but really you end up pressuring the property way more quickly if you've got random deer movement. If they're popping out at six different locations on the southwest side of this thicket, it's a lot harder to hunt them effectively and to keep the property hunting fresh, especially with that at the core of the property like it is.
Right. And these guys were hunting a lot more of this core. You know, they talked about being in tree stands right along these edges through here. And oh, the deer would pop out down here, or it'd pop up there. And that's the things that we were talking about was, man, you just left a pile of scent in the middle of your property. We need to get right. You further to the edges, which is what this is all about on the north side. And this is all about on the south side. And the core of this property is untarnished throughout the entire season.
Right. Very good. So Sam, as you just zoom out and say, okay, what is my number one stand location? Where do you expect to get that picture of this landowner holding a buck this fall?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about something in here because it was so good. I think these two points on either side of this are going to be dynamite because deer were running back and forth through here all the time. But now we've really condensed them to two spots. One of the things I'll just throw out there is a flyer, because we haven't spent any time down here talking about it, and I just got to make mention of it, is I took this guy down along the riverside here, and this was a pretty wide and flowing river, and is one of these moments of, oh, I've never really been down here on this part of my property before. Yeah. Josh, I think that's a famous line of yours, you know, introducing people to their own property.
Right.
And you know, and we kind of looked up from this grassy area, and, you know, you could see the back of the outhouse back here. And I'm like, you know, one of your best travel conditions you have, or examples of travel you have, is right along this stream bed or the creek bed here. And yes, some of this, a good portion, may be at night, and guys might knock it and say, well, they're just piling out of this field and coming through here. That could be, but man, if you want a quick, easy rut stand to pop into and be down here on this, you know, looking at what the topography does. So the fencing took care of that travel where in the absence of topography. Well, here we have a topography feature. We got that river running through and that really strong travel pattern, which now we have a quality food source up in here and some of the best bedding in here. This was an absolute gold mine for bedding because it was mixed timber. We had hardwoods, conifers, really brushy. You got a lot of box elder and trees that are growing on their side. I mean, this was thick and just riddled with deer in here, but this was not up here. This was grassy and kind of open pines and really wasn't much to get into, but you cut a little shooting lane in here. You got a travel corridor, and this is a setup you could make in an afternoon and hunt it the next morning if you really wanted to and be successful.
Excellent. Excellent. Jake, you have anything else for this this design? The property looks fantastic. I'm looking at food all around it. Certainly no shortage of deer and probably no shortage of big deer on this property.
No, I think it looks really good. And what, like, that was the first time we saw kind of that southern part of that property, and that looks really attractive. I see a lot of properties like that in Michigan where guys have river frontage, and Sam nailed it. There's so many beds. That's a great bedding opportunity there, right kind of where that river, there's a little oxbow there, or just where those points right there along that creek bed. Deer love to bed right along those points. They have a really safe exit. It's kind of a bulletproof bedding area right there. So it's just a really strong travel route a lot of times, or right along that creek bed or that river system. So that, I would say that's a pretty good spot down there too. But I love the plan.
Thanks a lot, Jake.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, guys, thanks for joining me. Sam, thank you for sharing this one.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Josh.
Folks, as I always mention, first of all, if you haven't already, go check out our YouTube channel where you can find the visual breakdown of the property. You can see what it is that we're talking about. So if you're just listening to this, you've missed probably 3/4 of the podcast, because most of it is here visually. So you should probably go check that out. Go find it over there on YouTube. It'll be an awesome way to follow along with exactly what it is that we're talking about, glean what you can. But I also like to mention when we're doing these, and I should have said it at the beginning, just because you have 100 acres with a river or creek flowing along one edge does not mean that this design is going to work for you. So please, every property is unique. Every property that we design is a customized design. So I would hate for you to be disappointed after you take, take this design and try to just plop it onto your 100 acres. But certainly do grab those principles that you can glean and learn, like influencing deer movement. Put them into practice on your deer hunting property, and let us know how you do. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you found this helpful, do us a favor and leave us a review wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you want to keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at whitetail_partners, on Facebook, Whitetail Partners LLC, on YouTube by simply searching Whitetail Partners, or online at whitetailpartners.com.